We will call to order the House Judiciary Committee at 1:17 p.m. on Wednesday the 26th. We have several bills for consideration. The first one will be HB 307, HB 285 will follow, then HB 306, HB 242, HB 291, and then HB 292. The first bill for consideration, present are Representatives Tui, Bundy, Green, and Porter. We hope that we will have the other members as they get their food and get down here. We just got off the floor of the House, and I apologize for being late. Because I guess that it's the last few weeks of the session, the three of us have got bills and other committees that we may have to run in and out for. Hopefully nobody will have to leave before another member gets here so we can maintain a quorum. We will not be hearing 242 because that is pending referral and it hasn't been referred yet. So there's one off the hook there. I would also then, beginning the testimony on HB 307 with the sponsor's permission, like to explain the CS. What would you prefer?
No, you certainly are welcome. I'll give them a little background when you're finished, but go ahead.
Okay. In very, very simple terms to be expanded by the sponsor, there is an abundance of people who want to testify, and I would imagine that most of them are desirous of testimony because of the inclusions in the original bill. The prohibition of pull tabs, which was the main inclusion in the original bill, is now not a part of the committee substitute and will not be considered by this committee. The committee substitute, which has been faxed to all of the sites, teleconference sites, and is available here, basically goes back to the concept of trying to take the proceeds of gaming out of politics and precludes people who have received proceeds that have permits and have received proceeds of gaming to contribute any portion of those proceeds to political candidates or political parties or political groups or those kinds of things. So those who were here to testify about the fact that they would lose the ability to fund their charity function from pull tabs, the heat's off. In any event, I see people leaving the room. Thank you very much. I think the first thing probably that to stay consistent with what I just said would be to entertain a motion to adopt the CS that does what I've just said. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, pardon my mouthful. I would move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 307. I presume that is the F version, 42495, as our working document.
I believe it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We've had a motion to adopt the CS / F Frank 42495. Is there objection?
No objection, Mr. Chairman. I would just ask that the sponsor read the title, the new title.
Thank you.
The bill is. CS is in front of us, Representative Tui.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, I had every intention to read the bill. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak on this today. Proposed CS for House Bill 307 Judiciary. This is an act providing that a political use is not an authorized use of charitable gaming proceeds, prohibiting the contribution of charitable gaming proceeds other than the proceeds from raffles to candidates for certain public offices, their campaign organization, or to political groups, provided that the political group is not a qualified organization for the purpose of charitable gaming other than raffles, relating to raffles, and providing for an effective date. This bill, well, that's the title. This bill would directly prohibit the misdirection of gambling proceeds from being funneled to political use. I do not believe that anyone can legitimately consider politicians or their attempt to influence the electoral process a legitimate use of charity money. Raffles are exempt from this prohibition. When raffle tickets are sold, the purchaser has full knowledge of the cause that the raffle represents. There is a zero fiscal note to the Department of Revenue. Your support would be much appreciated.
Thank you.
Here's the question.
Representative Tui, are there any questions of the sponsor?
Representative Green.
Representative Tui, you indicated that there could be no way that a politician could be considered a charity. Have you looked at your payment schedule?
Thank you, Representative Green, for the chair. No.
Okay, we have quite a few people signed up to testify, and I'm going to presume some of them now are perhaps not as motivated as they were. But I will go through the list, and I would appreciate if someone was going to testify on the other version of the bill, and it isn't necessary now to just let us know and we'll go right on. Is Stephen Early here in Juneau?
Yes.
Stephen?
I was just on this previous
bill. Please come forward if it is that you want to testify.
On this previous bill, you had a where you were keeping track of the funds and watching where the net proceeds went and how much it cost to rent and such and such. And I was, hadn't got down that far in this other draft to know if you're still sticking to that or if you've thrown that out in this other.
I believe that's current law, sir.
Well, I'm sure it is. I was just wondering if you, the governor has a task force on gaming, and if you guys would pull up that testimony that the task force has, I'm sure you could use it to this stuff.
And a question of what?
I'd like to see if
how?
You could.
How?
I can get it for you.
No, excuse me, I don't mean that. It's how would it relate to it? What this bill does, it says no political controversy.
That's all this bill
does. All this bill does. It mentions nothing else.
Oh. So, well, this other one mentioned.
Oh, yes. Well, we had three of them out there. This is the best of the bunch. Thank you.
Is Annie manager? She was probably one of the people that said thank you very much enough. Gary Jeffers? Tim Armstrong? Renee Blanchard? Judy Frank Burr? And Jeff Pritcher is here from the division to answer questions if we develop any. I'd like to then go to Anchorage and ask if Warren Culver is still interested in testifying. Hello, Warren.
Yes, I am.
Could we have your testimony, please, sir?
My name is Warren Culver, and I represent the Veterans Fund, the American Legion, and the Disabled American Veterans, and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. We did have an extreme opposition to the first bill, but because of the changes, we certainly support that wholeheartedly. But we would like to take, Mr. Chairman, just a few minutes to explain some of the impact that would have been possible if the bill had went through as commission proposed. And it's more or less a little spread out here. The protest sale would have a great effect because some posts depend almost exclusively because of smaller nature. They don't have, as you know, bars open around the clock. They're based because of a non-profit organization. They're not able to do so. So they rely upon the financial resources from the protests to take care of the many programs that we have, as well as helping in the community. We have several, as you know, community projects that are there. We help the police every year in connection with drug dogs and in connection with, I believe, they have the disabled children and the various other things that are concerned. The 12 posts.
Because
they would have to be close to closing down and for the Puntar province. They did not have 13 said they might be able to survive, but they would have to change the type of building that they had. So for the Puntar sales and the American Legion and Veterans Post, I'll just give you the American Legion amount of money. They donated something like $977,640 to community projects and to the Legion projects, as you know. As I mentioned, some of the smaller communities like baseball and their other charitable contacts, our veterans support services. By the way, we do have to get so many veterans now coming into the state, and many without lack of funds, they need to be helped. We do help them in front of the VA. We also provide a little bit of our community. We provide legal aid to them out of retirement. Basically, Mr. Chairman, this is all I have to say, and I appreciate that. When you mentioned here, I think I don't understand correctly, maybe. Did you eliminate the fact that the operators would be excised from the bill? I didn't have a chance to read.
We have not, to my knowledge, Ms. Calder, we have not affected the current condition of what operators may or may not do, with the exception of their inability to take any proceeds and divert them into gambling or into politics.
Yes, well, I'm not an idea, as you know, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I'm told that everybody in Matt Sewell has, with the new version, no problem. So I'll ask if the individual in Kodiak Silver should testify, Mr. Nicholson.
Yes, aside from thanking you very much for the opportunity to address the committee, I have two brief points. Elimination of poll tax, so please don't let anybody push it over, because if that comes back in, we sure do have a lot of work to do. office. Well, the resolution, of course, is apolitical by national fiat, and we have no problem with that. But we do like to talk to our legislators in connection with ballot measures that affect the veterans. The terminology following public office, a constitutional amendment and initiative for other ballot measures, is a little suspect in my mind as to whether that might, somebody might reach out and say, we're not even supposed to talk to our representatives or senators. And I'm wondering if you just put a period after public office, if that wouldn't be sufficient.
Thank you, Mr. Mickelson. Be assured that this does not preclude any organization from being involved in politics. It only says that you should not use those proceeds for that purpose. If you have other, and the proceeds from gaming, of course, have to be accounted for individually so that, it's easy to track what organizations do with those proceeds. We're saying that you should use those for their intended stated purpose by statute of the charity work that you do, and I know you do quite a bit. If you have other reasons to contact legislators, you certainly may, and if you have other funds with which to support political candidates or activities, you certainly may.
Thank you very much. That sounds like we're in sync.
You bet.
Thank you.
Going into Fairbanks, is there anyone that still wishes to testify in Fairbanks? The first one on the list is William Helms.
Yes, I would like to say a little bit. We did have a group from various organizations here, and before we go out, you might not testify because of the division. Everyone was not here to begin with on the original proposal. I would like to go on the board and Earl and Kodiak. That as a veterans group, we and as everybody's right to contact your legislators.
Yes.
But under no circumstances are we allowed to campaign for individuals as a group. And I think that that's all I have on this, but as a whole group here, the majority of them go on with the new proposal on stopping the game when we're taking federal organizations to be with politicians. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Helms.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Finkelstein?
Hey, Mr. Chairman. I think some of the confusion shared by the witnesses on what we're debating today is shared by me as well. I'm experiencing a wave of deja vu, and could someone explain to me?
Well, if you make the meetings on time.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not so much talking about the actual procedural thing, but the intent here, and I guess the question I asked is, when did this appear? Is this, or I guess when did I get this? Maybe I just failed to notice the change, but I thought we were talking about a bill.
This is a new CS which was adopted, and pull tabs are now off the table.
And when did we get the CS?
Today, I believe.
This morning.
Okay, I must say it is a completely different subject. What I need to do is go get my materials for the other bill. This is a completely different topic they were talking about before, which I'm not complaining about, other than I wasn't ready for this topic, and we've always had a policy of if a new topic comes up in a new CS, that we give them time to get our materials on that topic.
Well, with that in mind, that's why it was delivered this morning, but I recognize most of us had were otherwise engaged.
Can I just ask one more question that will help me understand what this is?
If you could have your staff retrieve your documents. I think you're very familiar with the topic. I don't think you need to study it because this issue
is this bill identical to the one that went onto the floor?
This bill, this bill prohibits any political entity from receiving money from poll tabs.
So in that effect, it's identical to the one that went on the floor.
I have no idea whether it is or not, but this is a bill actually standing on its own 2 feet.
It certainly is the same intent as the bill on the floor.
Right.
And I don't think that it, does this affect Raffles?
It does not. Raffles is the only thing, because a raffle, Mr. Chairman, as you know, will be a quilt or a rifle.
So to that extent, it's the same as it was on the floor.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know if you have the answer to this question, but if it's possible to get, what's the ruling on how procedure operates in a house? I can never recall the same bill or cover the same subject going through a second time unless it's ones from the one house and ones from the other house. But that may not be answerable right now, but do the rules allow for the same bill and the same subject going onto the floor?
I don't know, but it would not affect the deliberation of the committee. We'd have to make that determination.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Does Leon Mercer wish to testify on Fairbanks? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone named K-Nice Lund?
Yes, there is.
First one on the list that I have is Loretta Lund. Is Paul Lund,
I don't want to testify at this time.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Jane Berger?
Yes, my name is Jane Berger, and I'm with the American Legion Auxiliary Department, and also the unit here in Kenai. I, too, would like to thank the representative superintendent for listening to the and being aware of the necessity for an
Thank you very much. I believe there's one more left in Q&A, so I'm going to track down. Okay. That's all that I have listed for Q&A, so Don, in Anchorage, is Jesse Eubanks still wish to testify?
Yeah, this is Jesse Eubanks, and I'm very interested in Anchorage, and I'm affiliated with the American Legion. And I took the time to call last week in preparation for Saturday's conference to find out how much was given to charity from five different posts this year. It amounts to $175,000 to the different charitable organizations and money that was spent in the state. I'm happy to hear that the bill has been changed to let us keep on with the programs. But I just wanted to make sure that you knew that how much was spent from five posts for organizations. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Peter Ashenbrenner there? I'm sorry, Peter, you had another bill.
Thank you.
This is beginning to run the other way. Charles McGee?
Yes, my name is Charles McGee. I'm sure it's always speaking here. On this particular bill, I don't see much difference between that and what the front of the fund is experiencing was back in New York, being held hostage. On this bill, or any bill comes up like this in reference to the gambling organization and lobby that process comes up, and how people are held hostage. And I find I'm looking at professional working for the AG's office. Why is there an omission here on the fourth page? Qualified organization, line 9, doesn't indicate that qualified organization. Investor, that, as you all should know, Security Exchange Commission considers each and every American citizen an investor in this country. Why is that omitted? You people are elected officials, and you have at your disposal Attorney General's office and those professionals. Why is this omitted in the qualification of organizations? And I'm a member of the biggest organization in this whole entire country.
We'll look into that question, Charles. Do you have anything further?
Yeah, in reference to the similarity between the bank in New York, the permanent fund, how it's being held in copies through contract negotiation. And gambling organization, I find it to be sentenced according to their state.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else in Anchorage that wishes to provide testimony on this bill? Seeing none, is there anyone on the teleconference network that wishes to provide additional testimony or new testimony on HB 307? Yeah. Is there anyone else here in Juneau? Seeing none, we will conclude the public hearing and stand at ease for a moment. Did you have to?
I didn't talk to him.
There's nothing in this new bill that's the school tab at all.
But we got to have the majority of it's covered because.
I mean, they are still going to be able to do it because of this.
We need to get it out of here. Just says, we can't do any kind of charity.
Right, I understand. It's political.
First of all, I actually wasn't even here when we had the other day, so I didn't learn my minutes. If anyone was performed or something, but it happened in some circumstance where I couldn't be here. I did want to offer thought that there should be a level of
it's not a qualified. You won't make it, will it?
There should be a whole convention.
Do you have an amendment?
Well, I think somewhere in the record, probably your records, there's an amendment that exists.
He's at the House Finance, he might be there. So she said, no. They're going to throw you out of here.
All right. The rules, at least from the floor, and I think the committee is going to make some people watch the committee. The committee is going to sit on the table. It's not just before you.
Meeting back to order at 2:15. Under consideration of CS for HB 307, we have concluded public testimony. Representative Finkelstein, did you want to make a conceptual amendment? I would accept it, considering how this got in front of us.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I've come to the conclusion that having compared every line, this is the same on these issues. The treatment is the same as the bill that I do recall. Is that correct? I make the assumption that the bill that arrived before when it treated these subjects, not other subjects that aren't in here, such as the reporting requirements and the treatment the additional treatment of parties, that on these subjects it's the same? There isn't any difference.
I can't speak to that. All I can tell you is this prohibits political entities from receiving money from poll tabs, period. So whether it's identical to the other bill or it's the same, I can't speak to that.
Well, I believe that there's a distinct difference then, because the previous bill also precluded the limbo receipts.
Right. And this does.
This does
this
not.
Does not.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to pin down now whether it's identical or not for purposes of any procedure thing. It's just my understanding of it.
That is a significant difference. Then. Basically, there's three opportunities for revenue. There's more from varying kinds of raffles, but this bill would only preclude one where the other bill precluded two.
What I'm hoping, I haven't even had time to literally read this bill. I mean, just for walking in here, and if someone could at least, maybe the bill sponsor, maybe someone else who's available, could just tell us what each section does, I would be aided considerably.
Can we come to order, please, and Annie will go through the section.
Introduction, the work draft prohibits charitable gaming as a method of raising funds for political purposes, except that the proceeds from raffles may be used for political purposes. Section 1 provides that the department may issue permits to political organizations to conduct raffles only, and it provides that a political organization may not participate in a multi-beneficiary permit. Section 2 prohibits a political organization from contracting with an operator to conduct raffles. Section 3 revises ASO 515-105 to clarify that political organizations may not receive proceeds from any type of gaming activities except raffles. It prohibits any part of the proceeds from other gaming activities to be given to a candidate for public office, state or subdivision of the state, or a candidate's campaign organization, a political party, a group organized under or affiliated with a political party or a political group, or a group as defined in 1530-130 paragraph 4, which is the elections title to the statutes. Proceeds from all raffles for political purposes must be used within 1 year of their collection with a proviso that's addressed in another section of the bill. Section 4 amends AS 05-15-150 to state that net proceeds from raffles may be dedicated to political purposes, defines political uses as those aiding candidates for public office or groups that support candidates. Section 5 adds a new section that states that political organizations may hold raffles for political purposes or for other purposes allowed in the statutory scheme for charitable gaming. That is, a political group can hold a raffle and give the money to another charitable organization if it wants to. It again states that the proceeds must be used within a year unless the organization gets special permission from the department after a showing of good cause. Section 6 modifies the definition of political organization for charitable gaming to require that the organization must have been in existence for 3 years before it may apply for a license. Section 7 is a conforming amendment, and Section 8 is the effective date clause, which is January 1st,
1996.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the explanation. There appears, now that it's on through, there is one section I've never seen before. If I could, I see a representative of the division here. If I could ask him a couple questions on that section, section number 6.
Jeff?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Prather. I'm the Revenue Audit Supervisor for the Charitable Gaming Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Prather, the Section 6, is this just the regulations, essentially the regulations that are already in place? I know no one gets a gaming permit unless they've been in existence for...
Right, this is already in statute that you have to be in existence for 3 years.
Oh, it's in statute, it's not even in regulation.
Right.
Is there any reason why we'd be putting it in statute again?
I don't know.
Okay.
Is
yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, it would appear to me, regardless of how you define political organization, that we've sort of mixed up definitions here. We define an entity that's eligible for a gaming permit as the key when it comes to these kind of definitions, what kind of qualifications it takes to get a gaming permit. And since this is essentially identical, it's sort of pointless.
Thank you.
If I could get my staff to answer that, he will be able to, I think, clarify that. And I apologize for not having the answer. I've been on the floor today, and we just got this in. And so.
No, just
got it. Okay. For the record, I'm Marlene Coggins, and I'm an aide to Representative Tui. And I respond on shaky legs because I had a huge learning curve. Thank you very much. Here, but my understanding is that because we now in Section 5 have created a new section addressing political organization raffles. We include that just to address that new section so that it applies to the new section. It would be consistent with other law, but because we created a new section called political organization raffles, the draft will follow through with that.
Well, all the provisions of this, that it, you operate without profiteer members, that's, and the, you have to be existing for 3 years, it's already the definition of what it takes to be charitable gaming permit. So you have to, in order to qualify, you still have to get a permit. If you can't get a permit, then you can't be the organization that's involved in these things. Now maybe, is it at the other end that this is coming in, that unrelated permits, and it's focused on recipients? Maybe we need the bill drafter, but if it doesn't do anything, we should take it out. If it does do something different than existing law, it hasn't been explained.
Can we get hold of Bill Drafter? It was very clear that we needed this section in there because we have once you mention a new entity, you have to have the section in there.
If you can return to this issue, I'll contact Bill Drafter. He was unable to attend because of his workload, but I'll contact him.
Thank you.
Okay, with that in mind, did you want to consider your conceptual amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the other question I had is how are we going to tell the, an entity gets all sorts of money and they don't expend it, and how do you tell that they aren't spending it on these banned political uses? The old bill, the bill that's already passed this House, which has all these provisions, has as well a provision that says that there shall be a reporting requirement, and that by that requirement you can find somebody to make sure that they actually show they got $300,000 in gaming, and here's where it went.
I think I can answer. Tell me if I'm wrong, but rather we're enhanced reporting requirements in the other bill. The current law requires the documentation and accounting of proceeds of gaming all the way through the system. And if the information that is now required by statute or regulation would provide the ability to account for all the monies that go through that system so that you would be able to discern whether it went to the wrong place or the right place.
Well, I guess, Mr. President, the what was, and I don't have the other bill in front, the one we've already passed, what was the point of the reporting requirements in that one, if what the chairman says is true?
It would simply provide, facilitate the audit process for us, but all of the information that a permittee is required to report according to this bill is currently required. If we were to audit the use of these proceeds, we would simply have to trace it out of one permittee's account into another to determine whether it had been used correctly.
Chairman, if I could have, I don't have a copy of
what
we have already had.
That will allow the debate as a second, the other bill. We've had a sectional analysis of what's in this bill. What it does in relation to a previous bill is really not relevant.
Well, when it's on the identical subject, it is relevant.
No, it is not.
Mr. Chairman,
it is not.
Mr. Chairman,
we have had an explanation of the sectional analysis of this bill, and that's what's in front of us, not just H.2.44.
All I wish is for a copy of it it appears that you have it in your hand. Could I look at that reporter?
You may, but we're not going to take a lot of time with your review of another bill that's not in front of us.
Mr. Chairman, we spent hours and hours in the debate of that bill. I understand that bill. I've never seen this bill. Okay,
you just had it explained to you totally.
Well, I wouldn't say totally. I asked a question, and the number of people who the sponsor couldn't answer.
You asked it in relation to another bill, and on the one inclusion, there was an explanation which wasn't satisfactory to you, so we're going to go get the bill drafted to answer that one.
Well, the issue I'm trying to discuss right now is that on the floor we had a long discussion about the reporting
on another bill.
But reporting requirements that apply to this provision, why these were necessary, so I become confused, and now I'm looking again. I was told then that from the department that those were valuable reporting requirements, and I'm trying to understand why they're not valuable now. I guess is what it comes down to.
I'm reading that out of order. The question is what's in this bill, not what the value was of reporting requirements in the other bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Ask another question.
Actually, I didn't ask a question. I was just trying to explain.
I interpreted that to be a question.
Well, no, I asked that before. It was answered. And now, now looking at the language before, that is what we adopted to implement this section.
Did you want us to answer that?
Well, not when I was reading, he couldn't do that.
Could I ask Mr. Fraser a different question?
If it refers to this bill, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I understand your testimony to be that you do get most of the information, but that it makes it easier to handle the information, this additional reporting requirement. Is that the difference? The ease of transmission?
Certainly, if we had... the more information we have, the better we're able to deal with it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We had an answer to the other question. Marvin, could you come forward? Thank you, Jeff.
Don't go away.
In response to your question about the need for the language in Section 6, the bill drafter has explained to me that in Section 7, if you look down to that, we're taking political out of qualified organization. And therefore, he puts that up in as a requirement for under political organization, since we're taking it out of what we term qualified organization in the next
section.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Are there any further questions on the bill?
We have two amendments I'd like to offer.
Please.
First, Mr. Chairman, is I apologize for this being conceptual, but
under the circumstances, it's okay.
The that in the world of acceptable uses by a political party of gaming permits, we're saying here that none are acceptable. That's clear. What I'd like to do is amend it to say that any political use, including the definition, or use related to a political candidate, which is defined here in the bill, wouldn't be allowed to a candidate in any race, but that activities that aren't related to elections of candidates in the state, such as conventions, could be allowed, because all the parties have activities that are in the realm of, you know, civic activities. They do direct election activities, but they also do their conventions and the bigger, broader activities. And I think we've got it here. Remember, we've got groups of people who are home builders who are allowed to run permits to run their organizations. We've got groups of realtors. If you're a bunch of realtors, you get to do it. And if those kind of internal activities are going to be allowed, they ought to be allowed for a party to hold its conventions as well.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is the whole point of the bill. We are eliminating contributions from gaming proceeds other than raffles. Now, if those realtors would like to support the candidate, they certainly can write a personal check. But we are eliminating, and I think we're the only state in the union that allows political contributions to come from poll tax and gambling.
Mr. Chairman, it's the problem with conceptual amendments. I just didn't explain it very well. It doesn't have anything to do with that. We are allowing, with this bill in place, we're allowing realtors and, I wish I had that list in front of me, but a whole variety of trade associations to use gaming permits to run their organization, to hold their internal meetings, to train their members, to do all those kind of things. Now, we're saying somehow, that's fine and consistent to say that parties shouldn't be able to give money to candidates, because in this bill you're doing it to everyone else as well. But we're going further with parties and saying you're such a complete non-entity, you can't even use this as these other trade associations can to, I remember the other example was bowling hall. People who own bowling lanes are also one of the groups in here. That if you're a political party, you can't even do what they're allowed to do, which is just hold your internal meetings. Under this conception amendment, nobody can still make political contributions, period. But you use it to hold your convention.
Okay, let's not debate it. Let's try to articulate it. So what would your conceptual amendment be?
Would be that parties would continue to be banned from political contributions.
That's already in, so just say what you'd like to make it, the change
right
to be.
they would be allowed to conduct the same activities, non-political activities that the others are allowed to do.
Well, I wouldn't say non-political, because a campaign is definitely a political activity. I mean, a convention.
Right. Well, there's a line in here. I'm just trying to apply that. There's a line in here.
Oh,
okay, the line says...
Where are you at?
Well, the line is applied to these groups that they may not make a contribution to...
Where are you?
To, I don't know where I'm at. Because I'm remembering the old bill, which I'm lazy to say. I suspect I'm at page 2. You can't make a contribution to any portion of net proceeds to a candidate for political office.
Page what? I'm sorry. I mean, line what? Right there.
Actually, I'm on page 2, line 24 through 26. But in the conceptual world, which is where I'm at on this, this bill says that no gaming permittee can make political contributions. And all I'd like to do is apply that same principle to parties. Parties could get gaming proceeds, they just can't go and make any political contributions. They can only use them for internal meetings such as a convention.
I object. Mr. Chairman.
Can you tell us where in this bill the prohibition of a political party using their gaming proceeds for internal activities is?
I don't think there's a prohibition for political parties who get money from raffles to use it for parties or anything else.
Okay.
The only prohibition is for them to receive money from other sorts of charity payments for any reason.
And they're precluded from holding a post lab license?
Yes.
Okay. So
I'm suggesting they'd be allowed to hold a post lab license. They aren't actually called post lab license, but these licenses we're talking about, they'd be allowed to hold them only to the degree that in
other... Okay, now we're getting closer. You'd like to allow political parties to have gaming licenses for the use, for internal use, for all uses other than direct contributions to candidates.
Direct or indirect.
Okay. Official amendment number 1 would amend the appropriate section of the bill to allow political parties to conduct gaming, to qualify for permits and conduct gaming. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Finkelstein?
Yes.
Representative Cheney?
No.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Bundy?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Senator Porter?
No. Amendment number 1 fails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the other amendment I wanted to offer is to include the reporting requirements.
I think I would accept as a conceptual amendment the motion to place in this bill the additional reporting requirements that can be found in HB 44.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have another amendment, but that yours may make more sense than mine. And I could identify that as the Section 1 of House Bill 44 Finance amended, which one of the key provisions is that it mandates that these permittees provide access by the department to those accounts to ensure that the proceeds are not diverted or transferred to any purpose other than permitted by this chapter.
Okay, do you understand the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, could I ask Jeff if you have a problem? Is that...
Do you understand what the conceptual amendment is, Jeff?
Well, I'm sort of confused about the reporting requirements. Which ones we're talking about? The ones 2 months ago? Representative Martin first introduced his bill.
Now we have a version here. If it's the section you're talking about, could you let Jeff see the...
What's the last? Is he looking at this bill?
No. I think it's okay.
Is it
right?
Mm-hmm.
Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you that the division is very concerned about these types of requirements because they would place an impossible paperwork burden on us.
I knew. Oh.
These weren't the requirements or the reporting requirements that I was referring to earlier.
Okay. Representative Finkelstein?
Mr. Chairman, what I'm after is the when we had this bill before us previously, there were reporting requirements you liked.
It wasn't this particular bill. It was an earlier form
version.
Of this bill, earlier version.
Of the same bill?
Yes. Of Representative Martin's bill.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to put this on the bottom of the pile so that I could try to get that version and bring it back while we get through the bill?
And I'm not sure if that was a part of the bill or something that was being discussed during the hearing.
Okay, we'll hold this floor for a few moments to try to get that language. And if we could then go forward with consideration of the next bill, which is HB 285. We seem to have someone here from Representative Moses' office. Could you give us your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rosetta Demoski. I'm staff for Representative Carl Moses. And I'll be testifying on his behalf this afternoon on House Bill 285. House Bill 285 seeks to increase the current homestead exemption amount from $62,100 to $150,000 and also clarifies the adjustment calculations addressed in Alaska Statute 09.38.115, which are technical corrections necessary for the Department of Labor. House Bill 285 would allow homeowners under bankruptcy proceedings to maintain the equity of their homes by increasing homestead exemption. Increasing the exemption amount to $150,000 protects the homeowner's equity from creditors upon liquidation of their assets. House Bill 285 also clarifies the method of processing processing bankruptcy exemption amounts and requires the Department of Labor adopt a regulation announcing the changes in the dollar amounts. House Bill 285 amends Alaska Statute 09.38.115 of the Exemptions Act to reference the annual average consumer price index and changes the reference base index used in the calculation to the most recent year the amount of the exemption is established are amended by legislation. Currently, the adjustments made are referencing January of 1982 as the reference date. R.B. Williams, Director of the Division of Administrative Services for the Department, and Chris Miller are here this afternoon to answer any of the technical changes or corrections to this section. The reason for the homestead laws is the preservation of the family farm, home, or other assets in the face of severe economic conditions. In each case, the property that may be homesteaded is designed to perpetuate the family's estate and improve its chances for survival in hard times. The homestead provides a backup and a form of insurance against unexpected catastrophe. Many will argue that homestead law is a way of wanting to shelter their assets. That is not what has motivated this legislation. There are people who outright own their homes. House Bill 285 only adds additional security. In cases of bankruptcy, this will simply protect someone from losing their primary residence. On behalf of Representative Moses, I respectfully request your support and passage out of this committee.
Thank you, Rosetta. Representative Bundy?
Aren't we really usually hard on Representative Moses' bills, particularly if they come from a staffer who is their first time? I forget. Are we supposed to?
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
No.
We're supposed to be nice in this committee.
Yes, I have several relatives up there.
Rudy or Billy?
Rudy Demoski is my father.
Oh, okay. Well, you get a chance to see.
I spent several nights in a tent at 50 below in Galena when I was wearing OD. Are there any other questions for Rosetta that have anything to do with this bill? I see none. Thank you very much, Rosetta. We have Sharon, I believe, Kelly, Alaska Credit Union. Sharon, welcome.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Sharon Kelly. I'm president for Alaska State Employees Federal Credit Union. I'm here representing the Alaska Credit Union League, and our credit union is a member of this league. We have submitted a letter to you, Chairman Porter. Have you received a copy? I would like to go through the points in the letter. We appreciate the opportunity to speak on it, but we respectfully request that you consider not approving this particular bill, at least in the form that it's in. In the previous legislative session, we supported efforts to actually reduce the homestead exemption. It is our belief that a lower exemption amount creates a better balance between the rights of debtors and creditors. Public policy that limits and discourages bankruptcy is important to assure consumer credit is available to those at a reasonable price. This House bill reverses the efforts of the 18th legislature to lower the exemptions, but on a national level, there was abuse in the bankruptcy system, and just last year, Congress approved bankruptcy reform. The current federal exemption is $15,000. It was increased slightly. We don't understand what the logic is to increase this 10 times of what the federal exemption is. A person that declares bankruptcy can make a choice between choosing the federal exemption amount or the state exemption amount. So I don't understand why someone would choose the federal exemption if it was...
I don't know if I heard you. Did you say the federal exemption was 15?
15.
$15,000.
Yes. It was just increased to $15,000. It is important to remember that the homestead exemption relates to the amount of home equity a borrower can protect under bankruptcy. If a debtor is headed toward bankruptcy and has a large amount of equity in his home, he can protect his credit by taking out a second deed of trust and paying off those creditors. We don't understand the logic of allowing a person that's going bankrupt to keep this $150,000. We do believe that people should be entitled to take their home. I've testified on probably four or five different bankruptcy cases this year, and this was never at issue of whether a person was going to lose their home or not. Credit unions are member-owned financial cooperatives. If loan losses are increased, which this piece of legislation could possibly do, it's going to cost all of our members more money. It's going to increase interest rates, lower their dividends. Credit unions in Alaska have a long history of working with our members who are experiencing temporary financial hardship. At the same time, it is important that the legal system provide effective avenues for recourse to collect from those who have the capacity to repay. By increasing the exemption amount, this proposal is inviting abuse and over time will cost to all the borrowers. The Alaska Credit Union League is our trade association for Alaska's 17 credit unions. We represent 300,000 people in the state of Alaska, and we're a primary source of consumer loans. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thanks, Sharon. Representative Bundy?
Yes, thank you. Sharon, you said you've presided over or been involved in four or five bankruptcies, and no case had they attempted to take the home. Yet you're opposed to legislation that would allow people to keep their home even though you don't try to take the home.
There's a difference. I think that we're talking about people that have their home. Say if the home is worth $100,000, they owe $92,000. If the debtor says, I want to keep my home and I'm going to reaffirm that debt, they'll keep their home. The difference there is $8,000 in their home. We're talking about people that, I mean, you could theorize on some different situations where a person could go out, take a cash advance out on their credit card, apply it to their home, and then the credit card company would go in a bankruptcy. They'd have to write off that debt, and the member would have the advantage of the $5,000. It's kind of taking it's a way of protecting assets to the amount of $150,000. This situation happened in Florida, where they took away exemptions and people went down and bought huge homes and sheltered all their assets, and then went bankrupt, then sold the home, and they had their assets afterwards. And that's an extreme of the abuse that can happen. And we think there's some reasonable compromise in there.
Just, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
my education. In a really abusive situation, but isn't there a period of time where they couldn't sell the home, otherwise that money would become available to the court? Or could you declare bankruptcy in the next week, sell your home, and have the money?
Once it's been discharged, you'd have to go back to court to fight that it was that happened. But I would imagine someone reasonably would structure it so that they didn't subject themselves to that.
Thank you.
See any other questions? Thank you very much, Sharon. We have someone also from the Department of Law here to answer questions if there are any of the committee. Is there anyone else from here in Juneau that wishes to testify on HB 285? Seeing that, we'll close the public hearing. What's the wish of the committee?
Chair.
Representative Feinstein?
Could I ask a question of the Department of Law?
Certainly. Christian?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is
Kristen
Donagent. I'm here for the Department of Law and the Department of Labor.
Thank you. This whole subject is new to me. If you believe that you're in a bankruptcy, you know, you could be subject to bankruptcy proceeding in the future. At what point is the latest date that you could actually go and make the shifting to protect the assets? Because it is amazing to me even what the current law is. Obviously, if you had $30,000 in a savings account and a few other things you're trying to protect, you'd go and buy equity in your home, you'd pay off the debt. Now, can you do that any time prior, or does it have to be, you know, do you know anything about that question? What would be the time period?
I'm sorry, I am here primarily to address the amendments, the items that are addressed at 09-38-115. I've done very little bankruptcy law, and I don't think I could address your question about when those transactions can take place.
I mistakenly left off two other people to testify on teleconference, and perhaps one of those two can. If not, we'll get the previous witness back for the question. Yes, thank you very much. Could I ask if Jerry Weaver is still available in Anchorage?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Jerry, could we have your testimony, please?
Yes, we could. Mr. Chairman, I'll probably short. I'll try not to repeat some of the information that's been given. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Weaver. I'm Senior Vice President and Manager of Commercial Loans for the National Bank of Alaska. I also serve as Secretary for the Alaska Bankers Association, and I'm authorized to speak for the Alaska Bankers. The Alaska Bankers Association represents all of the commercial banks in Alaska, the mutual savings bank we have, and the savings and loan. And I can say unequivocally, we are opposed to HB 285, increasing the dollar limit of the homestead exemption. This proposed legislation does nothing but send the wrong message to debtors that Alaska is one of the few of the states that offers an incentive for a debtor to convert his or her non-exempt assets to cash, part of what we're talking about, and then to invest that cash in a large house that would be beyond the reach of creditors. There's been a little discussion, I think probably many of us saw the television 60 Minutes coverage of the multi-million dollar estates that were purchased in Florida with the explicit intent of denying creditors any chance to recover their money. Alaska does not want to be in that league. Alaska's present homestead exemption of 62.5, as it suggested, is already among the more liberal of all the states. And when we have made this change, we would clearly be among the top 10 states in the country in state exemptions, and as has already been noted, it would be more than, it would be 10 times the federal level. There is no good reason to increase this dollar amount of this exemption. So basically, this is a rich man's bill, at least right over those, probably those in Anchorage and Fairbanks and those cities with very, very large residences. And Mr. Chairman, we're opposed to it totally.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Any questions, Representative Finkelstein?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry, I don't know if you know the answer to this either, but if one was to try to do the, if one's going to shift one's assets to protect them from bankruptcy and not be in violation of the law, is there a particular deadline? Is it the day before you file bankruptcy, or is there another date?
I just to be honest with you, Representative Finkelstein, under the new bankruptcy act, I'm not exactly sure. I know on trust cards under the new bill, if you use your trust card to pay your taxes, then the trust card debt would not be exempt. And my belief, if you were to use it to pay down a residence, the transfer period would be 90 days or so.
If I may, Representative Finkelstein, it just so happens that I'm trying to sponsor a bill that would amend the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. While it's got some problems in another area, it is amending it because while I think that the fact situation you described would be a fraudulent transfer and then come under that act to be able to be nullified by the creditor, the problem with our law right now is that it requires specific intent, which is a high level of proof. So, with that acknowledgement, I would say it is a fraudulent transfer, your fact situation, but it's a very difficult one to prove.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, especially in its relationship to another bill, it may or may not be it isn't a fraudulent transfer at $54,000 under the bill, $150,000. It's a legal and proper transfer because we have made this the exception, right?
No, it would be a fraudulent transfer under the law if at the time the transfer were made, you could prove that transfer were made to avoid an existing debt. To avoid having that asset exposed to an existing debt.
But to apply that, anytime you went and bought a house that was your primary residence and you put any money down payment on that house, no matter how small, it would be argued that if you were in any debts, that could be a basis for money.
It's a question of a fact situation that would be presented to a jury, but if the creditor felt that transfer, either into buying a house or turning it over for a dollar to your brother-in-law, is a transfer to avoid an obligation, it's a fraudulent transfer and cannot be done. Again, proving it's difficult, but technically by statutory law, it's prohibited. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard earlier testimony that Alaska was, I think, in the top 12 highest states or something. And of course, we're usually number, when it comes to economic challenges, we're usually number one. I wonder if I could ask the representative, the bill sponsor, how much these other states allow for homestead.
Go ahead, Ms. Galena. Rosanna, could you come up?
And how's the, you know, what's our last?
Do you have any other states?
Currently, there I believe there's 8 states that don't have a an exemption limit, but they do have other conditions for elderly, and you can own, you know, so much acreage, or your home can be on so much acreage. I believe in your packet there is a. A memo from Ledge Research with the states listed and what they allow.
Mm-hmm. Where's the back? What are you looking at? I'm sure everybody else knows this, but the first time I read this bill, I thought this only applied to homesteads. And who's going to put a house like this in the middle of 160 acres?
Yes,
right
back.
Yeah, states that 8 states are. Provide for homestead exemptions to unlimited value under certain conditions.
Thank you.
160 acres on the farm, so they can do. Are there any other questions? I have one other person to testify. Marilyn May?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Marilyn May, I'm Assistant Attorney General for the State of Alaska, and I'm the supervisor of the Collections and Support Section, which, among other things, collects unsecured debt owed to the state. And I've also spoken with a number of other Assistant Attorney Generals who do collection work for the state, and there's unanimous opposition to this bill. I believe the purpose of the Exemption Act is to provide a balance between a creditor's right to payment of a valid debt and a debtor's right to maintain some dignity and get on with life without being thrown on the street. And anything that goes beyond protecting a debtor from destitution is really taking money out of a creditor's pocket. Any benefit you give to a debtor is a direct penalty to the creditor, who may in some cases be in worse financial condition than the debtor. There may be situations where a creditor who is owed a significant amount of money may wind up losing his house because his debtor has the assets tied up in house that the creditor can't get to. This homestead exemption, or any of the exemptions, don't just protect the debtor's lifestyle in a vacuum. It's done at the expense of the creditor, who may be no more able to absorb the financial hit than the debtor. If the purpose is to avoid having debtors lose their home, then the current exemption statute is way more than generous enough. There would certainly be huge judgment debtors in the state of Alaska who own a home that already has more than $52,100 worth of equity in it. This bill affects a very small minority of wealthy debtors, and it invites abuse. It creates a distinction and favors the well-to-do debtor as opposed to a poorer debtor who has never been able to buy a home and shelter assets in that way. It favors a debtor against a creditor, and it favors a person whose assets may all be tied up at home as against some other debtor who has other types of assets, even if they don't go to the fraudulent transfer route and choose to sell or borrow on other assets and put all the money into a home. Another debtor whose money's all tied up in a fishing boat, for example, or a guy who has an airplane or a trucker who owns a truck, those people are all at risk of having their assets taken to pay loan debt, where a homeowner, for some reason, is given this special treatment, and in fact, is against those other types of assets that I mentioned, a productive kind of an asset that brings anything into Alaska's economy, like the trucker's truck or the fisherman's boat. This read, I think generally that Mr. Weaver was correct, that at least it was, I think, 90 days and something like that.
Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. One question, Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The if you've got someone, here's an example, maybe help me. You've got someone who is going into bankruptcy. They've got $150,000 of equity in their existing home, and it's current law, not the new law. Is what they're required to do at that point is take out a new mortgage to extract the equity to repay some of the people they owe money to. Is that generally how it works under existing law to get down to the $54,000 or $60,000, whatever it is?
No, the way it works is that a creditor who is aware that there's significant equity in a home that exceeds the $62,100 exemption would have to foreclose on the home. There's no way to force the debtor to take out a loan to extract any of that equity. The creditor would have to foreclose, and at the time of sale, then the debtor would be allowed to keep the first $62,100 of proceeds, and any remainder then would go to the creditors. First, the creditor that did the, well, actually, first it would be the creditor that holds the paper on the home, and it could go down the line from there, but the creditor is still forced to go through the process of foreclosing, which is an expensive thing, and that's why creditors are so reluctant to do that unless there's a very significant amount of equity in a home. As it is now, it's practically impossible with the exceedingly large exemption that exists currently. Also, I wanted to mention two things I forgot to say. One is that Ms. DeMonte mentioned that there are eight states that have no limitation, dollar limitation on the homestead exemption, although there are other conditions. There are also states, and I don't have a list of them, but there are states who don't allow a homestead exemption at all, who assume that as between a debtor who owes a debt and a creditor who is owed the money, that it should be the creditor who gets to keep whatever equity there may be in that home, and the debtor can go find a different place to live.
Thank you, Marilyn. Are there any other questions? President Green.
Earlier we heard that one of the concerns would be that if we increase the amount of exemption, that somebody could borrow money and put it in the home, as we've heard, whereas under the current law, they could borrow money or decrease their equity by taking out a second mortgage. And I'm wondering if, I believe you were the one who discussed that, is there a likelihood that a lending institution would do that? Don't you have to disclose your financial conditions? And I'm just concerned that somebody who was trying to stay alive without this increase might not be able to get a second mortgage to get funds that were necessary to alleviate whatever the problem was.
Let me take a real quick crack at it if you've got anything to add. I think that a second mortgage is based principally on the value of the house, and that's the equity. I mean, that's the, what's the term? The thing of value to hold out.
Asset.
No.
Collateral.
to offset the loan. I've been dealing with Tory for too long. It's not a collateral benefit. It is. And in the main, if the value of the house was the home was there, that you'd probably be in the ballpark for it.
Well, and I know how it works. I was just asking as an attitude situation. I mean, is that, yes, there's, according to the the estimate of the value of the house will go that route or no? Or is it, this looks shaky, we probably wouldn't. Is there an attitude there that, or is there a policy? What I'm trying to get at is, one of the reasons that you were objecting to increasing the value, you stated, was that they could go out and refinance, and therefore they really wouldn't need this if they had to have some additional money for whatever.
You're asking that of Sharon Kelly?
Yes.
Sharon, could you come up?
I was just trying to follow up on your statement earlier.
I think that the situation that we're talking about is that you've got two situations. You've got a person who is struggling either, I can speak mostly to consumer debt, but commercial debt either. And so they either have a business or they've run up their credit card debt and they want to pay it off. And so I think your question was, would the financial institution loan to them? And I would, if you looked at a loan application, you would see that if they paid off that unsecured debt, their debt ratio would fall. They'd probably get a lower interest rate, and they probably could restructure their debt so they wouldn't have to go bankrupt. That would be one situation, and that would be the one that we were recommending. The second situation would be where they were, in fact, structuring their debt so that it was all unsecured. They got all their equity. They declare bankruptcy, and they walk away with most of their assets intact.
Okay, my question then is, on one case, you probably would grant your refinance, and the other one would not?
It would look strange to me, evaluating a loan application, if someone came in and was a serious credit risk if they had $150,000 equity in their home, because it would show up very evident that there was structuring going on.
And I'm thinking of more likely attitude where they have maybe $50,000 equity or $25,000 equity. Under current law, they can protect up to 62, I guess, now. If they were in that range of owing $80,000 or $85,000, reasonable, a lot of, and they came in and needed $15,000 for, and your answer, I believe, is based on what they tell you they're going to do with it and their financial situation, you would make a discretionary call there.
We would probably lend to them based on the fact that it is a secured debt. And I think, Chairman Corey, you were talking about loan to value on the collateral. And if it was within the guidelines of 80% of the collateral, the financial institution, it can probably, we could probably collect it if we had to repossess it and go into foreclosure.
Even knowing you're only one of many who may be looking for a lot more than that. I mean, you're looking at the value of the home and not the concerns about the debts. Other people who would be with you trying to...
Well, what we've done...
I don't want to belabor it. I'm sorry. I'll withdraw the question.
Are there any other questions to Sharon, Mr. Chair?
Could I make one comment on this? The cases that I've been in bankruptcy have been bankruptcy abuse, and it's been where people have gone up and run up their credit cards, and I'm talking about consumer debt, not so much commercial bankruptcy. And the reason that we're there is that it's a business decision. You have to go in and decide whether you're going to fight for this, but it's usually because people have gone out and tried to structure their debt, and we write it off. And I've read statistics where someone who's gone into bankruptcy in 3 years will have tripled their net worth. They can recover very quickly.
Sure.
One
last question. Just in your experience in dealing with court cases on these, if under the existing law, if I was to plow, $500 a month, you know, when you make your payments, if I was to add $500 a month to the principal payments each time for the next 5 years, knowing often, you know, 6, 7, 8 years from now, I might be going bankrupt because I rack up a whole bunch of credit card debt at a time, but I'd establish a pattern over many years of just taking my normal $750 a month house payments and making them into $1,250. Is there any? Am I likely to succeed? I mean, it's basically a scam. I'm shifting assets, but I'm doing it at such a regular basis, regular payments, that when I go bankrupt, I've got huge credit card, other debt. Am I likely to succeed and protect those assets until they reach the existing limit?
It depends on how aggressive the creditors want to be. What we found is that the creditors that want to go in and argue these often get reaffirmed their debts, because we've seen a situation where people have deferred, put money into deferred comp, and they've done exactly what you said. They started it a while back, and they kept building it up, and then all of a sudden they have to go bankrupt. But they forced themselves to go bankrupt by deferring their income. And when we've argued it, we were successful in having that case thrown out of bankruptcy court. So it depends on if the creditor's going to take the position. If no one shows up and no one cares, it's a matter of whether the creditors are going to show up in bankruptcy court.
Are they likely to succeed in getting this money out of my house if I put it on in a regular basis over 5 years? Are they going to be able to? I mean, I've kept it under.
The law's written right now.
Right.
I would go in and argue that. If you had put money in and you had equity in your home and you were going bankrupt, And it, you're saying if it was...
If I just upped my payments, I'm now going bankrupt. Many years ago, 5 or 10 years ago, I just upped my payments some and put a larger amount in. I can't imagine how you could succeed.
I'm not sure that you could succeed unless you could really show. Usually what you're talking about is somebody that's purposely planning a bankruptcy.
Right. Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any other persons that would like to testify either on the teleconference network or here in general on HB 285?
This may would like to make a response here,
Ray Chris. I'm sorry, Marilyn?
Yes, thank you. On that last question and scenario about the paying off the debt at a slow rate, building up equity, I think the reality is that in many or most cases, the creditor may not ever know about that. There's got to be something to tip off the creditor to look back at something like a house payment. The reality is that if I'm trying to collect a $50,000 fine against someone, I'm probably not going to look beyond the fact of the value of the home and what goes on it. The chances are, unless there's something unusual about that, or unless somebody has tipped me off, which so far has never happened, then I'll never know. So it will likely work.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman.
Thank you, Ron. Now, is there anyone else who wishes to give testimony on HB 285? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. What's the wish of the committee?
Chairman,
Representative Finkelstein.
I could just make a general comment. I really appreciate this bill being brought before the committee because it's a complete education. I had no idea this homestead exemption existed in the first place. It's not necessary in committee, but if it was, I'd declare a conflict of interest here because I'm learning something that amazes me. It's completely in my interest under existing law to take some money I saved up and go and pay off part of my mortgage, because if in the eventuality I eventually go bankrupt, I 10, 20 years from now, there's not a chance in the world that no one's ever going to get that asset. And I do not have 50,000 or whatever the current limit is. I don't have anywhere near that equity amount. I got about 8,000. I got plenty of room to move up to it. I'm sort of being a fool by not getting up to that limit. This is an amazing protection that you totally screw up, your business things go to hell, you're fully responsible, you do any of the worst things in the world, they're never going to get this money from me, you know?
Well, that makes sense. What do you think of the bill?
I'm from my existing law.
Mr. Chairman, may I just say that we have heard a classic case of the very young and the very old. We used to do that in the old days, is pay off the house, and that is the main function, so that you'll never lose it.
Up to
generation gap.
Well, in deference to the very old, which I am,
put me in that category.
The idea of paying off the home was to get rid of the mortgage, but not necessarily to fraudulently avoid debtors.
No.
We have no one else to testify. Again, what is the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chairman,
okay.
You asked all kinds of questions, had all kinds of discussion. I think I understand the purpose of the bill and why it was introduced. If you have the home here in Alaska and it's paid off, and there are some people that have their homes paid off, they would be more than $62,000. And it's my understanding that your home is protected because that's your... That's an asset that would be protected beyond bankruptcy. They could not take that home from you.
Well,
the way you're saying here, they can. I thought that was not the case.
Well, we have kind of mixed apples and oranges with this discussion. This would allow the attachment of a house and the lien of a house, but it presumes the person is not in bankruptcy. And that was part of the questions about bankruptcy. I couldn't tell you whether, if that happened, if I, for example, fell behind in my payments on my house, and they said, we're taking back your house, if I filed bankruptcy the next day, whether the exclusion for my house within the bankruptcy law applies or not. I just don't know.
It probably wouldn't at that point, but I was saying, you know, no one never knows when you're going to end up in a bankruptcy situation. You might have good credit, good jobs, and done everything and paid off your house. You might be living on a fixed income like retirement. Something might have come that made you incur a debt that would force you into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Bad debt, bad credit, whatever. Can they take you home?
unless you declare bankruptcy, would be my general non-attorney response. And then what the timing is, I'm not sure.
Well, based upon the information that the Attorney General's office provided, they say that this would not be indecent to people to keep their home, but to allow them to sell them because of the equity that they could draw them. And that might be a problem. I was wondering if anybody was going to address that, or if that should be taken into consideration by the sponsor of the bill. Do you have any?
It's like my understanding that if you were to claim bankruptcy, they couldn't touch your home. I mean, if it was worth $150,000, they would either, you know, give you a check for $150,000 so that you can buy another home, or if the whole point was to protect your home with somebody who does actually own their home, and, you know, elderly usually, or who have a fixed income like retirement, do own their home. And I know a lot of people out in rural Alaska actually own their home. And when you consider shipping costs, material, labor, building a home out there, and it could be not a very elaborate home, it's just a home. It costs money, and people do put their livelihood on hold when they invest in something like a home out there.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, it just seemed like to me that so many questions that need to be answered or some other work done on the bill that perhaps it doesn't need to be moved at this time. I don't know.
Well, I think with that additional information on the well, there is. Oh boy! I got a bill on House Finance. I'm not sure of the bankruptcy requirements, quite frankly, and we've had two AGs, and they're not either. If the other members feel that would be appropriate, I would like to get the answer to the bankruptcy issue.
I agree with Representative.
So if we could hold it over, the question, if there's any other questions in the committee, please let's articulate them now. But the question is, how does this affect bankruptcy? In other words, we're exempting $150,000 of equity under normal circumstances without bankruptcy. A creditor cannot, if this is the only asset that a person has, a creditor cannot attach equity up to $150,000 under the bill. If a person goes, and that then, I guess, would leave the creditor begging for an ability to receive compensation. But what happens if the person declares bankruptcy with a house of that value? Is all of that protected under bankruptcy law or not? Okay, we'll hold that over.
What's your order?
68, 35, oh no.
306 is it?
No, two.
306.
306. And there's three people on telephone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, half an hour. Maybe we need you.
The chairman is going to have to go to, as he indicated earlier, we are being overrun with appearances of the committee, so he's
Chairman,
going to have to take a...
Can I make excuse? I need to go make some deposits in my...
Before you understand what the final outcome is on bankruptcy.
Yeah, 48,000 is plenty.
That'll do it. That'll bring us up to the CS for House Bill number 306. And we do have the sponsor sitting among us. Would you care to make a statement, Representative Toohey?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I respectfully requested my staff justice because she is highly more qualified than I am for the last 3 days. Please,
that's certainly acceptable.
That's acceptable.
I'd like to add my impetus to that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You think?